afternoon, everybody. It is March 5th, 7:13 p.m., and it is a great fucking day right now.
It's a Thursday, my dude.
It's a Thursday, and we hope everybody's doing great. We've had a great day. Busy. Busy, but great. You got to be great.
And thankful.
While you're busy.
Gotta be thankful.
And thankful. And blessed.
Blessed.
And
not stressed, baby.
Definitely not, I'm not even going to say that. But we hope everybody's doing great.
Yep.
Having a great day. We love you. And we got a lot of sports to talk about. We got some good treats for you today. We have an interview with, man, if any of you have got a fever for some SEC, we got a treat for you. We got a doctor in the house.
Got a prescription for you.
Got a doctor in the house. It will be with Dr. SEC, so that will be exciting. But first, let's dive into things here. The XFL, week five's right around the bend, and I couldn't be more excited.
I couldn't be more excited to bring it to you live here.
You know, here at B-Team, we just want to make sure that we bring you the best version of the sport in context that nobody's going to understand.
And that makes perfect sense to us, and hopefully it does to you.
To us, it makes perfect sense. It couldn't make any more sense. But onward, Seattle at Houston.
First game, Saturday, March 7th, 2 p.m.
1 p.m.
1 p.m. Oh.
2 p.m.
That's Central, Eastern, whatever.
Hey, oh, by the way, don't forget to turn your clocks back.
Yep, sleep in when or
do we
wake
do
up early.
When
I don't
does
know.
That happen?
I think it's Saturday. I don't know, Sunday.
Do we gain an hour? Do we get more sunlight?
That's how fucking, like.
Why do we do that to ourselves? As humans, why do we do that? Oh, Who was it that was like, fuck that?
No,
was it Alaska?
It's for farmers or something. No, there's only certain states that do it.
Right.
It's like the states that like have a lot of ag and all that.
Okay, but.
And even they don't like it. The farmers are like, this is dumb.
All right, this is going to be an even more dumb question. Mm-hmm. Is Groundhog Day tied into that shit at all?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen the movie, so they may explain that.
Well, no, that's Bill Murray, and he's just living the same day over and over again. Right. But I don't know if, like, the groundhog sees his shadow. That means that winter ends early.
And he didn't.
Right?
He didn't see it this
year.
Yeah, so, yeah, it ends early, which is kind of happening. It's warm, dude.
We just had a tornado. I don't really know how any of that shit works, but I just know that as humans, we make things really difficult. We put ourselves in a box.
Well, I know that we're getting dumber.
Darker and lose sleep.
Yeah, but you know what's cool? We're getting dumber because my phone's going to tell me what time it is eventually. I'm going to be like, wait a minute. It was 8.
That's true, but it's not now because the clock just keeps
on. My phone's going to tell me. Then I'm going to be like, oh, wait, we changed time. I don't even know if we fucking spring forward or I don't know.
Anyway, moving forward on ABC, Seattle at Houston. Houston has the best passer in the league. He has almost 1,000 yards already, week 5, Phillip Walker. They also have the two of the best defensive players, tackle-wise. They have Beniquez Brown with 29 tackles, and they have DeMarquez Gates with 28 tackles. I like the Roughnecks, and obviously they should be the favorite in the league right now.
Yeah, they're 4-0. You got Seattle's 1-3. Mm-hmm. Seattle is tied third in the West. Houston is first in the West.
That is true. All facts.
Seattle is 0-2 on the road, and Houston is 2-0 at home. Mm-hmm. So, if everything's going correctly, Houston should storm them. My final score on this one's going to be 30.
More tornadoes, though.
34-15, Houston. They're going to take it to them.
Wow.
Plus, I mean, they're on a 4-game win streak. They
haven't lost. Take the over?
Yes, take the over.
The Roughnecks have kind of been a lock in the over, so let's make sure that we take note of that, ladies and gentlemen. We want to make sure that we're paying attention to these kinds of things.
The over's 46 on that game.
You're not going to learn much from this, but if you learn anything, I don't really know what it's going to be. That's for you to decide.
It's for you. Yeah, it's all up to you.
This is all up to you guys. We just put it out there. You take it and do what you want with it. It's like when a grandpa gives you a tool set.
Yeah, or like Play-Doh.
Yeah.
You know?
Look, we don't really know what you're going to do with it.
Legos, dude.
But figure it out.
Lincoln Logs.
Next game. Are we both in agreement? Houston here?
Yeah, Houston. Okay.
I can't even fucking get the name out of my mouth here. It's so disgusting to say.
The New York Guardians versus the...
The Dallas Renegades.
Thanks to you.
Man, it's... All right, so for those of you who absolutely probably don't know this, his team's the Guardians. My team is the Renegades. Obviously, they're playing right now. And guess what? We are 0-2 at home. Not looking good for us. But these guys like to choke a lot.
Hey.
So we'll see.
So what you have is some two mediocre-ass teams at 2-2 taking it on down in Texas.
To see we're going to see who can go above 500 here and who's going to go below it, son. This is probably the best game of the weekend, in my opinion.
Both teams got something to fight for and really get after it. Both teams also second in their divisions.
Division. Yep. Okay?
You got New York second in the East.
Hey, two possible XFL – what are we just going to call it, the XFL Bowl?
Yeah, the Extreme Bowl.
The Extreme Bowl. X-Bowl. We'll just refer to it as the X-Bowl.
X-Bowl.
And we'll just see if, you know, where it goes from there. The X-Bowl. Hey, two prospects.
Yeah.
Right there.
Right
we got
there.
2 second spot. They're sneakers. They're sneaky.
I mean, these guys definitely could be in the semifinal.
Peaky Blinder.
Best beat the semifinal here. New York, 0-2 on the road, which is funny because they're on the road.
Yep.
Dallas is 0-2 at home, which is funny because they're at home.
When an unstoppable
force is going to win this game.
Meets an immovable object. That is what we have here. Who's going to win? Nobody's going to win.
Dude, what if they don't
they're
even
gonna
play?
They're just going to go till.
What if they don't even play?
Something. Well, no, we're not going to say that. I don't want anything terrible to happen. But if just by chance none of the gear shows up, like in the airplane.
Or they bring. Oh, we sent the Vipers jerseys to Dallas.
Oh,
fuck.
Fuck, man. And then they got to dress up as the Vipers. Like. Just wear different jerseys.
And then we'll be able to say, well, back in 2020.
The first season, week 5 of the XFL.
The Guardians actually had to wear the Vipers uniforms to take on the Dallas Renegades. Could you remember that? Crazy times.
And did you know that the game actually did not get completed because in the third overtime, there was a storm.
A storm inside of a dome, and it snowed.
And it snowed outside while tornadoes were also around it while the game also continued to play. But it didn't continue after the third overtime.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's the kind of shit that we're looking forward to in this league because, honestly, we really don't have much. This is kind of like
the People's League.
And I don't mean it. Look, we love the XFL. We do. But this is kind of like getting hand jobs in the eighth grade, and the XFL is just full-on sex. Or the NFL, excuse
me.
NFL just full-on sex. It's incredible. You're into it. And then this is like, I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
This is a pretty cool makeout.
I'm not
going to
turn that down.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like I got nothing else to do on a Sunday night.
Nothing's going
on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'll you know what? If this is all I can get, I'll take it.
Yeah, it's still sexual, which is football,
right? Still pleasurable.
Yeah,
you still get something out of it.
Still gets me off.
It, you know,
if you know what I'm saying. New York has a one game win streak.
Right.
Dallas. With a one-game losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Let's take it to the betting odds.
That's interesting, man. That's interesting.
The over on this is 37 points. I have that. I have under. I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be below 37 points. And actually, I mean, looking here at the stats, the professionals would tell you that Dallas is favored by 8, or 7.5, actually. But. As a long, prestigious
so right
veteran
now, actually,
of
Dallas
the Guardians.
6.5. I have this marked. We're going to go ahead and take
like
that spread.
7.5 on action.
Oh, here. Fuck. It changed to 7.5 on action?
It sure did.
Looks like action's better than me, boys.
A little
sharp
update.
Better. Little update here. Hey, breaking news.
Hey.
Yes, sir. Breaking it left and right. Battlehawks Defenders. Who do you have, man? The Battlehawks are a nice 3-1.
Are we going to pick the Guardians of their Dallas? We can say who's going to win that game?
Oh, yeah. You, Dallas.
Guardians, okay.
All right. Battlehawks Defenders.
Battlehawks and the Defenders.
Battlehawks have the I'm not going to say the number one running back, but they have Matt Jones, who has 244 yards. The first one's Davion Smith for the Vipers.
Yeah.
And then the second one's Jacquez Patrick for the Vipers.
And they have a very solid quarterback.
And then Jordan Tayama is the quarterback. Right.
Very solid quarterback.
Very. Flowers.
Yep.
Cameron Artis Payne, in case you're wondering, who is the Renegades running back. He's in there fourth place. But the Battlehawks will probably win this game.
They're 3-1. The Defenders are 2-2.
Yep. Fact.
You got the Battlehawks are first in the East.
The first in the East.
DC is tied second in the East with the New York Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis is 1-1 on the road. DC is 2-0 at home, man. for that, kind of want to just stir it up a little bit.
Stir it.
You know? DC's on a two-game losing streak. St. Louis is on a two-game win streak. I think DC's mad. They're back home. They won two games at home. Then they lost two games away. Now they're back home. It's only a four-point – it's only a three-and-a-half-point spread. So – four. Well, it's – who knows? Action's all kind of updating. But I'm taking DC by six.
Hope I don't have the corona. You said what?
I'm taking DC by 6 points.
Really?
And a fourth quarter stunner.
You think they will win by
a fourth quarter stunner. Cardale Jones back quarter
fade.
You
don't think that Battlehawks will get within 6 points of them?
I just think it's going to come down to a touchdown. Like a last second floater.
I think the Battlehawks will win by 10 or more.
Alrighty.
And then the last game of the weekend on that Sunday slate. The Vipers taking on the Wildcats. The McDonald's LA Wildcats.
This is the first, I would say, shit bowl of the season.
Pretty bad game.
1-3 versus 1-3.
Mm-hmm. Pretty rough game.
You got fourth in the East and third in the
Vipers,
West.
Though. Taking the Vipes.
Tampa Bay 0-2 on the road. LA 1-1 at home. Tampa Bay on a one-game win streak. LA on a one-game losing streak. I'm taking LA 21-17. I got the LA McDonald's Wildcats 21-17.
That's nice. You have the Wildcats?
21-17.
I have the Vipers. So, UFC, we have Izzy versus Romero. And I like this pick for a lot of different reasons. Izzy is the pick, that is. Man, I don't know what all these dogs are doing, but son, we're going to get it handled. Shut the fuck up! In the nicest way. Hey! Hey, you keep... Don't you look at me. Sorry.
Sorry, guys. I forgot we shoot the podcast in the back of a Chinese buffet. Sorry, right. Guys.
Lot of dogs. A lot of dogs. But that's all right. So we're going to keep it moving here. Izzy versus Romero. The tale of the tape. Not really. We're not going to do that this time, guys. Those are only for the OG fans. We know what that is.
Yeah, and when it's an actual card.
Yeah. Izzy is 18-0. Romero, 13-4. It's the middleweight title fight.
He is also 12 years his elder.
Izzy's going to win.
He's going to win.
He's going to win by knockout.
I do, too. He's got a 6.5-inch reach. He's way younger than this guy. He's 6'3". He's 6 foot. The only way I can see this going the opposite way is if Romero just grabs his ass, puts him on the ground, and just starts ground and pound. But even then, Izzy can get off. But he's a style bender, man.
Okay, so
he's going to box his way.
He beat Robert Whittaker twice. Those are like the two out of the last three fights he's had in the past 2 years. And Izzy beat Robert Whittaker second round knockout. And Yoel's pretty much gone to decision. So, I don't know, man. I think Yoel's a scary motherfucker. Yeah. He's a specimen. Made in a lab.
I think him being 42 is going to be the difference.
Absolutely.
You can get caught being 42. You just can. No matter how badass you are.
It doesn't. So, I've got Izzy. I've got Izzy picked to win that one.
I do, too.
I think it could go. Knockout.
I have it. I'm going to go TKO.
Okay, so in this card, hey, pretty good for a fight night. We got two championship. I mean, this is a main event, but it's pretty good for a main event.
It's great.
The Wale Zhang versus Joanna Jacek. Jacek, I think, is going to win this. I think she reclaims the title. I know that Zhang only has one loss, but I think Jacek is coming.
Jacek,
she's the boogie woman.
She's 2 years older.
Mm-hmm.
She has a 2.5-inch reach advantage over Zhang.
Right.
She has a 2-inch height advantage. Man, I don't know. I was watching some videos of Zhang in the gym. Man, that's the fastest person I've seen punch, dude. She is a fucking like. I was watching her and I was like, yeah, her people have been fighting for way longer than anybody else has.
Warriors.
But yeah, like
the art of war.
Like ninjas. fighting robot is what she looked like.
She very technical.
And her trainer was a guy.
Stamina through the roof.
Her trainer was a guy twice as big as her, and she was kicking his ass, dude.
I'm just saying.
Oh, dude, like she would kick, and it would knock him back. And
I would get my ass kicked by like a mediocre MMA trainer woman. Like,
oh, dude.
Anybody involved.
Oh, dude.
Just rocked.
Rocked. I kind of would like, you know, one time, let a girl just get in there and kind of rock you.
Well,
daze you. And then, like, I'm done. Don't knock me out, but just, like, make me fall down and, like, everybody laughs.
So, we are very excited for the fights. But one more thing that we are excited about. You know, fights you get every month. But this only comes once a year. And that is March Madness. It's an exciting time. And to be honest with you, the best conference in sports, the SEC, is kind of rolling through things. I mean, we've got some threats, I think. Carlisle, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you're feeling on this SEC tournament we're about to see.
So the SEC tournament will be held March 11th through the 15th at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. and we have a lot of good teams participating in this, every team. I'll just start with the first four seeds. Obviously, the first seed is going to be Kentucky after Auburn lost to Mississippi State. Then we are going to have Auburn sitting at the number two spot. LSU will be at the number three spot, and then Florida at the number four spot. All these teams will play in the quarterfinals. Your mama.
Oh.
And then so the two first games, game one will be more than likely Georgia and Missouri. And then game two will be more than likely Vanderbilt and Ole Miss as things look right now. Man, so far I want to go ahead and say that I got
– Who's going to win it all?
Who's going to win it all, man? I'm going to go ahead and say, man, I think Kentucky is just because they're Kentucky.
Really?
Yeah, I think Auburn's going to choke in the semifinals because they're going to play each other in the semifinals.
Really?
Yep. I do. And then I think that LSU, it's probably going to be Kentucky and LSU, and I think Kentucky's going to beat LSU in the SEC championship.
Really?
Yep.
You think Kentucky wins it?
Yeah, I think they're going to beat LSU in the SEC championship.
Well, but we would play Kentucky in the second game if everything goes as planned.
Yes, we would play them. No, we wouldn't.
Why not?
Because we would play the second seed. We would play Auburn if everything went absolutely well, but we would have to beat Arkansas. And they have Macy Jones, who I think's probably the best player in the SEC right now. He won't win SEC Player of the Year.
Hello, Doctor?
Yes, sir.
Hey, everybody. We just want to welcome on Dr. SEC. Welcome to the Dome, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How y'all guys doing?
And we're doing good, man.
Doing good, man. We're really excited to have you on. Let's get things started, man. So how are you feeling about where the SEC is? Let's start off with college basketball. You cool with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, what team are you looking forward to seeing the most?
You know, it's really kind of one of those things this year that there's not a team. I honestly think that even though it doesn't feel like we have the heavy hitter, you know, whether it be
right.
Usually Kentucky or such as we usually do, the conference does seem to have, you know, from top to bottom, does seem to have, you know, some more depth than it's been having. So I'm really more curious about seeing some of the, you know, come SEC tourney time, seeing some of the bottom tier guys, some of the bubble teams, you know, and kind of seeing how those guys kind of respond. Because, I mean, you look at a team like Arkansas, you know, that's kind of battled injuries all season, but, yep. You know, now kind of healthy and maybe able to get it going, you know. Mississippi State, there's several teams right there that are kind of in that bucket, Alabama.
Yeah, Auburn really, losing last night to Mississippi State, that was big.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and so it's really gonna, to me, it's gonna come down. Can any of these teams get hot enough? Because really, there's not a whole lot of certainty of teams getting into the NCAA tournament right now, and so with it coming down the stretch, you know, there's about four teams that really have a good shot if they can finish strong in the tournament.
I honestly, I completely agree. And again, for those who don't know, this is Dr. SEC. He hosts The Waiting Room with Dr. SEC. It airs on 22 stations across 7 states. He's written for numerous papers and magazines. And again, you know, we can't thank him enough for coming on. Does Tennessee have a shot? Does Tennessee have a shot? Do teams like, because Florida, I do think, is lethal. I still do. I think a lot of people have kind of written them off because of the Tennessee loss. But I still think that they're very lethal and that they can – I mean, I think it's between them, Kentucky, and LSU, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think that as you talk about, it's really about, you know, kind of basketball's so unique. You know, in football, I'll give an example. For the past 8 years, I've done my week-to-week picks, and I've hit 93% of straight-up winners of every SEC game.
That's why you're the doctor.
Yeah. In basketball, I feel much more like the nurse practitioner than the doctor.
Okay.
It really has to do with, you know, how well you're playing at the time.
Okay.
And who can get hot. I mean, just think about, you know, kind of this bad weather kind of reminded me. But you remember when the tornadoes came through Atlanta that year and Georgia just out of nowhere gets extremely hot and wins the tournament, right? With like the roof falling in and everything else.
Yep.
So that's what makes basketball so unique, and that's what makes it so hard to predict, is because really any team can get hot at the right time. But I agree with you. What I like to do is go back to kind of it seems like, you know, a team like South Carolina, for example. South Carolina is a team that's kind of a bubble team. You know, they've got a couple good, really good quality wins. But the reality is Coach Martin typically gets those guys kind of ready to play this time of year. And wouldn't be surprised at all to see them get hot and do something. And with the you know, as close as this conference has been, even with Kentucky and we see Kentucky struggle to put away a Georgia team, you know, that's and across the board, it wouldn't be surprised at all if one of these middle of the pack teams, and really, who better than be one of those teams in Tennessee right now?
Ooh.
They've got a ton of talent.
Fulkerson, he's really stepped up.
They've got a really, you know, a really good coach that knows how to coach at these type of tournaments. And absolutely. So really, I think more than any, coaching is what matters, really, really comes into play this time of year. And I think Tennessee's a team that, you know, could very well be that surprise team. But it almost feels like that's going to be the case this year. Like, I don't think, and again, basketball is so much more gut than football, where you can really lay out the statistics and the matchups, and they tend to play out.
Yep. The numbers tell more. But I really kind
of get that gut feeling that it's not going to be Auburn or Kentucky that wins the SEC tournament this year, that one of these other teams are going to sneak up and do it.
Okay. I like to hear that. That honestly, that's a very SEC thing to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially with Auburn last year battling all the adversity they did and still doing whatever they did. I don't know how they did it. But that, you know, they kind of abused Tennessee there towards the end of the season, taking away their regular season SEC, you know, title hopes and tourney hopes. So I agree with you. I think it'll be one of these dark horses, a Florida or an LSU or a Tennessee. I mean, at least I'm hoping that's how it is. Or,
Yeah, and maybe it's just the fact that, like I said, there doesn't, week in and week out in the SEC in basketball, there isn't seemingly the, you know, the disparity in the scores that there typically is with the top to the bottom. It seems like it's a lot closer. Like, you watch Auburn, and you know that Auburn's a good team, and Auburn's a team that could get hot and absolutely make a run in the NCAA tournament. But at the same time, didn't Auburn kind of feel like a team that could get bounced in the first round too?
Absolutely. A lot of it's mental.
First or second round, you know.
Yeah, it's mental.
So
they're a head case.
Has that feeling this year.
I agree with you. I think a lot of it, because these guys are young in college, it's a mental. If you get in your head, especially Auburn and a Bruce Pearl team. I mean, Bruce Pearl's a pretty emotional guy, so a team can match that a lot, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I mean, he's one of those guys that I mean, we've seen it at Tennessee, we've seen it at Auburn. He's one of those guys that it seems like this time of year knows how to motivate his guys. Like, maybe he just kind of sits back and you see him throughout the course of the season lose those, like, head-scratcher games, right?
Yep,
and you're like,
yep.
What in the world is going on?
Yeah,
but
Mississippi State,
he always has that ability at the right time to kind of turn on the switch, and maybe it's going to be that way again this year. But as I watch some of these teams outside of the SEC, to me, they look more complete. Like, I like Kentucky. Kentucky's a very talented basketball team. But you definitely see, like, they're a team that doesn't have a lot of room for error.
No.
Like, they're a team that's got a lot of flaws there. Mm-hmm. And when they're hot, they can beat anybody. But at the same time, you can look and say, yeah, I could see them getting upset early in the tournament.
I agree with you. And I would love nothing more than to see that, honestly. Whenever I can see Kentucky lose, you know, I'm okay with that. So another thing that we wanted to talk about is what is let's go ahead and dive into some football. You cool with that? I know you are.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Any time of the year.
Good, because we've kind of been binge watching the XFL just for something. Just yeah.
Yeah, I'm sitting there counting. Like I said, everybody's excited about, you know, as the XFL is getting decent, you know, 20,000-30,000
right.
People crowds, and I'm like, yeah, but a G-Day game or an A-Day game, you know, it's 70 or 80 yeah. or 90,000. So
you're not wrong. That is very true. And yeah, I mean, we got to have something. We really, like I said, man, we can't thank you enough, because we don't really get any college football till April. Now, you know, you get the spring game, then you have media days in July, and then it's kind of full swing after that. But what we can start off with kind of some individual things. Carlisle, what are you thinking? Defensive threats in the NCAA. Who do you think is a player that's going to stand out, that maybe, you know, SEC specific, obviously, that maybe somebody hasn't kept an eye on, like a Dylan Moses, who was out, you know, for a lot of last season, or, you know, maybe a cornerback out of LSU like Derek Stingley. Who's a player to you that people need to keep an eye on?
Yeah, I think one thing you said that was absolutely correct is, you know, take your choice. You talk about Dylan Moses, but on that Alabama defense, I think they're going to be a lot better this year.
Yep.
Now, we're never going to see that Alabama defense of old. That's not going to happen. The game has changed so much that you've got to have almost 7 or 8, 9 defensive backs that can play and that can cover the field, and linebackers that can cover, you know, every position as well. So we're not going to see that as of old, but you know, that Alabama defense in particular, I mean, they were not very good, and we've kind of seen them on the decline. But the truth is, they played a lot of youth last year. They had a lot of guys that were learning on the ropes because of all the injuries.
Yep.
Some of them that you just mentioned. So it's going to be really intriguing for me to see the linebacker play at Alabama, because that's got to get a lot better, because it's obvious, and it's been obvious for some period of time, no matter how many 5 stars they put back there, their team, when they face a good quarterback over the last several years, they get toasted. I mean,
yeah, they get carved up.
They've been fortunate that they don't have, we've been on kind of a not great streak of quarterbacks in the SEC.
I know.
For several years, obviously this year was better. But so they've been able to kind of dodge that bullet till they get to the playoffs. And Clemson would toast them. Oklahoma would toast them as far as scoring points.
Oh, yeah. Trevor Knight beat them.
Yeah. And so they've got to find a way. And you know, that's the position more than anything I'm looking at, because is the linebackers at Alabama, is who's going to step up and be that dude. Because they've got to get a lot better at that position. So I mean, really, I don't want to, you know, there's 4 or 5, you know, as always, there's a lot of talent there at Alabama. But I would just put that whole unit on notice, you know, that it's really got to come from those. Watch those Alabama linebackers, because if they don't get better, obviously they're going to take a step back offensively. It could be an unusual year for the Crimson Tide next year.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm actually curious to see what you think about the sophomore at LSU, Derek Stingley Jr. Yeah, he had a great breakout freshman year. Interested to see what you think about LSU's defense this coming up year.
Yeah, so the thing about LSU was, and you bring up such a great point with Stingley, is that early in the season, we thought LSU wasn't very good defensively, right? Like, we were sitting there and we were like, they're just not a good defensive team.
Especially after Ole Miss.
Right. And all of a sudden, they got hot, right? But more than hot, they got healthy. And as they got healthy, some of those guys were able to just play the way. And Steeler's a guy I fully and completely expect him to be a guy that we hear in the Jim Thorpe Award type.
Absolutely,
conference
yes.
This yep. year. You know, that's probably, you guys know we've talked about this off air, but, you know, that's, to me, I vote for, I think, 11 different awards now, the Heisman. The Jim Thorpe one is my favorite one because of him and his, what he's done for Native Americans. But
absolutely,
but he's a guy that 100% is going to be in that conversation. And I think, you know, if I had to pick a guy out of the league, like, I think Georgia's defense next year is going
scary.
To be unbelievable. I mean,
right.
It could be the best defense Kirby Smart's ever had at Georgia.
Yeah.
And I mean, they are just loaded from top to bottom there. But if I had to pick one guy to say he's going to break out and be that guy to kind of take that next step on, I think you're right. I think Stingley from LSU is that guy. Georgia's much more about defense by committee, but you make a great point, Stingley. I think he's going to have a big, big, big year this year.
I mean, honestly, who's another cornerback that you think? Bryce Thompson, maybe? You think maybe he not Jim Thorpe status, but you think he could be a game changer, maybe get some attention?
Got into a little trouble, you know, with the law, but, you know, hopefully makes a comeback.
Hey, everybody gets in a little trouble, but at the end of the day, this guy, he's a playmaker. I mean, he was all freshman SEC, and obviously we're biased, but what do you think about him? Alante Taylor as well.
I think that's the thing about it is who he's got coaching him and the position that he's playing.
Yeah, pretty good.
And the talent that he has. He's definitely the only reason I don't have him higher on the radar right now is because there's a lot of off-the-field issues you got to work through and let play out. But he's definitely –
like Georgia.
He's definitely – I tell you a guy, another guy, and it's so crazy to me. I don't know how much you got to see Georgia play this year.
A lot.
But
one of our best friends, a Georgia fan.
Right. So
shout out
Nolan Smith from Georgia, it seemed like any time that – you know, of course, he was number one recruit on some of the boards last year.
Absolutely.
Anytime he was in the game, I mean, he was unbelievable at putting pressure on the quarterback. And I'm not sure if this is going to be his big, big breakthrough year as a sophomore. But if not, it'll be the next year. He's a guy – I honestly think he'll leave as one of the best pass rushers the SEC, or at least Georgia – has ever had, and they've had some pretty good ones over the years,
I'd say.
But Nolan Smith is a guy.
Okay.
That if I had to say a guy that maybe not on as many people's radar, like if you go back and you watch, you know, they were stacked, and so he went in the game a lot. But every time they couldn't get pressure on the quarterback, which was a problem for them last year. Anytime they couldn't get pressure on the quarterback, they bring Nolan Smith in, and he can swing around at so many different positions. On the field, you know, from secondary to linebacker.
Very versatile.
Yeah, you know, he's got so much versatility there that really he's the guy over the next, if not next year, definitely next year, I think is going to be, his stock is going to go through the roof.
I agree a lot. Now, you know, we love to keep it in the SEC, but you brought up pass rushers. A guy that scares the hell out of me is Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon.
Right.
Do you think he's not getting talked about enough? I feel like last year he was very underrated, especially towards the end of the season. Once you – I guess that's kind of the Rose Bowl, I guess, is when I started hearing people actually say something about him. But, I mean, dude is a game wrecker.
Right.
He is insane. And now he's got Justin Flo to add to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you make a great point. I think sometimes – it's funny how media perspective is, right? Like – I think sometimes you can have a great player on a team that is not historically known as a great defensive team, and he doesn't get near the credit that he gets. When we think of Oregon, we think of quarterbacks, we think of running backs, we think of wide receivers. But here's a guy that absolutely is changing the game. And the truth is, he's one of those guys, and there's only – each season there's only a handful of them, you know, maybe 5 to 10
yep.
guys that can change the game – because it's a team game, but can change the game.
Like a Chase Young.
Yeah, absolutely. And that he's, you know, obviously he's the prime example. But you kind of see that Chase Young light, if you will, And I think you're right. I think he's a guy that's went unnoticed because we kind of bury him away over there in Oregon and say we right. don't talk about them.
This is Central Time, son. We don't have time for that.
We only talk about them when they're putting up, you know, 50 and 60 points. If they've got a guy, you know, doing great things defensively or whatever the case is, that we don't really focus on that too
No,
much.
We focus on them jerseys, son.
Each week.
It's like, what, 2,000 combinations with cleats or something ridiculous?
the money is unbelievable there. I know everybody likes the traditional, you know.
Right.
I love it when teams mix it up a little bit. The only one I love black jerseys. The only
yes.
time I didn't like it.
Georgia's black and red is incredible.
Yeah. I'm hoping with Scott Cochran now being at Georgia – you know, he's the one that talked about they were going to the funeral right before the Alabama game.
Nick Saban's right-hand man is gone. That's how detrimental is that?
The Scott Cochran?
Yeah, for Bama. Because, I mean, everybody said, I mean, that's the heart and soul. That's a player's coach. I mean, that's the guy who kind of the glue, if you will.
And strength coaches almost get more time with the players than coaches.
Absolutely.
They're with them a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing about it is I think it made Georgia better. I think it was a great hire, and I can't say
which
enough.
Is crazy to say, by the way, because they're scary good.
I've been very critical of Kirby Smart at times for making rookie coach type decisions.
Yes,
I mean, look no further than refusing to put Justin Fields in over Jake Fromm.
Agreed.
An offensive coordinator position last year was the worst I have seen in some time. I mean, it really was phenomenal how bad they were offensively last year. When you think about it, they can rarely, you know, I think the last 7 SEC games, they averaged 19 points per game.
Ridiculous.
When you consider that, and the fact that they were still winning most of those games, but he did a phenomenal job this year hiring. I mean, the hires that he has made has been unbelievable. He's revamped that offensive staff and now adding Scott Cochran. So I think it's a really good addition for Georgia. But I think more than it's a good addition for Georgia, it is a blow for Alabama.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like every other time, you know, Alabama fans were like, everybody's, you know, I've never seen any other strength and conditioning coach that people walk around with his t-shirts on, right? Like,
yeah.
I've got a lot of family in Alabama and they wear the yeah shirts, you know.
Yeah, the Northwestern guy doing pull-ups as they walk out.
And so now that he left, which shocked me because I never thought he would leave Alabama. When he leaves, now everybody's like, well, he's not that big of a deal. We're getting this guy from Indiana.
Mm.
Okay, so this dynamic duo from Indiana are good. I think they're good strength and conditioning team.
Right.
But they are not Scott Cochran. And you got to remember, there's only one coach that has been on every national championship team that Nick Saban's ever had, and that's Scott Cochran. And we always knew, you know, each year Alabama just showed up bigger and faster and stronger than everybody else year in and year out. It wasn't just 5 stars. Those guys were, you know, they were developed physically. And this is, and you hit whoever said, I don't know which one of you said it, but you hit the nail on the head. You can talk all you want about head coaches, offense coordinators, defense coordinators, quarterback coaches. Nobody spends near as much time with those guys as a strength and conditioning team. Right now, you know, they're lining up and they're doing mat drills. They're doing whatever it is that they're doing there. It's not the coordinators that are there with them. It's that strength and conditioning team. So it is a huge loss for Alabama. Now, you know, I'm not going to sit here. Everybody wants to every time say it's a death blow. It's not a death blow, but I don't think that you're going to see the result of it this year. But 2-3 years from now, I think it's going to be a heavy hitter. But it's just phenomenal to think about. He took less money to go to Georgia after all that time with Nick Saban. Just unbelievable.
So now that we know Georgia's going to run a train on the SEC for the next 10 years, what do you think? I'm interested to see what you think about the transfers coming into the SEC. Kasem Hill's first year of eligibility is this year at Tennessee, and then you have obviously Jamie Newman at Georgia. I'm just interested to see how you see these guys are going to translate and if they're going to make an impact early.
Yeah, Bryant from Clemson.
Yeah, it's been huge, right? Like, I think a lot of people aren't going to like what I'm about to say, but I think if you told me pick one coach in the country that is by far the most overrated coach in the country, to me, unequivocally, it's Dan Mullen.
Yes. Butch Jones 2.0.
He is so overrated.
Yeah.
That, you know, the guy, you know, he, you know, the guy had, you know, he had a good season, one good season at Mississippi State, really good season, but people overreach on that one because what happened was that the three early wins that they had against those ranked teams that moved them to number one, all those teams ended up with five losses, right? Like, it wasn't like he did this unbelievable job. Now he's at Florida, and really, I mean, if you look at the overall aspect, he's really been in no more than this year. I mean, he's got an extremely favorable season this year.
Right.
I think he's a terrible recruiter.
Lost so many key players this year. A lot of people aren't talking about that.
I mean, you're talking about 6 out of 8 of your top receivers, and everybody's acting like that's not a big deal. You know, you lose so much on defense, people act like that's not a big deal.
No.
His schedule is lined up where he's going to have a good record. But I say all that to say the one thing he's done well is he's done really, really good at working that transfer portal.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's done really, really good.
He has.
Georgia has done
Emory
a good
Jones,
job.
Yeah.
I mean, where would they have been last year without Cager? And
true.
Tight end from Tennessee. You know, I mean, those guys actually literally won games for them last year, so they did a good job with it. And I think you're kind of in that now. Jeremy Pruitt's seeing the value of it. I don't think any is bigger, though, than Georgia picking up Jamie Newman for the simple fact that everything I don't know how to say this, I mean, without just saying it. Everything behind Jamie Newman right now is but for Georgia quarterback, right? Like, if they are Stetson, that guy is not an SEC quarterback.
Oh, my God. When they brought him in versus LSU, I know there weren't many options because you had the injuries, you had the ineligibility, whatever. But, I mean, good Lord. I couldn't believe that was a starter in the NCAA, first off. I mean, he's not a big guy. And you know, no offense, but it's kind of scary, one, that guy was even an option, and two, that has he read the playbook? Like, what in the hell was Stetson doing? It was a game.
And I like him as a guy, but
right,
he's really a guy that needs to transfer to Austin P and have a good career.
Exactly.
He's not an SEC caliber quarterback. You know, the next guy up, you got a freshman coming in that's it's pretty good and four-star material, but the truth is,
Brock Vandegrift.
He struggled last year.
Yep.
You know, people said it was receivers and all of that, but he struggled last year. Completion percentage was way, way down last year. He's not. That's if you're struggling to get at 50% at the high school level, you're not ready for the SEC yet. You're going to need another year or two development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, next guy up had brain surgery last year.
Yes.
So they were in really, really bad position. And, you know, Jamie Newman coming, and we don't know how good he is, right? Like, we saw him in the ACC, even though the ACC quarterbacks have done pretty good when they transferred over here. You know, they haven't crushed the world, but
no, Kelly Bryant, he survived.
Doing well.
Yeah.
A few years ago, Jacob Coker did pretty decent.
Yes,
you know?
At Bama.
So those guys have done okay transferring over. But here's the beautiful thing, if you're a Georgia fan and Jamie Newman doesn't have to be that good. Because what the world found out is Jake Fromm is not that good.
No, right? Those 8-yard passes and the running backs and the wide receiver. I mean, George Pickens going to be a very good candidate for the Biletnikoff Award next year.
Right, and it's almost like Jim Chaney should get a raise just based on how bad Jake Fromm was after he left.
Right.
And people will say, oh, it was the receivers. Listen, Jim Chaney hid all of Jake Fromm's flaws for 2 years.
Flawlessly, too. I mean, he pretty much had people saying he was a Heisman candidate at one point.
But it was crazy because I'm like, have you ever watched this guy? And it used to be like, you know, 80% of Georgia fans would get mad at me. Now it's like 80% agree with me. But did you ever watch this guy? Did you watch the LSU game? I mean, this guy, since high school, if he misses one pass, he's going to miss a dozen. Remember that if you watch him on QB1, he was playing against the team. And he got off a little bit. Man, he threw 3 or 4 interceptions, just boom, 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 boom.
It's mental.
And that is, he doesn't have that mental strength. he doesn't have the, you know, if everything's going good, you know, I look back at one game. If you remember Alabama in the SEC championship game, he was fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
He was fantastic. But you can't think of another game that that guy was really, really exceptional. You know, he was okay against Florida, but how in the world do you go six straight games at the University of Georgia completing under 50% of your passes?
I don't know, but I do have a question. Is it a red flag that Kirby passed up on? Are you going to talk about mental toughness? Justin Fields is a machine. The dude, I mean, he played against Michigan while they're up by 30 with a hurt knee, and you know, they let him because he's just that kind of guy. Is that a red flag in the long run for Kirby? Should maybe a characteristic trait, judgment issue, or is it just one that got away?
Well, I think it is. I think it is it was a character trait that was a lesson learned.
Because he's still honestly a new coach. It could just be one of those things that you're going to learn down the road.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think, and I was real critical, even though he's kind of.
So what, his fourth year as a head coach?
Fourth? At the University of Georgia. But I don't like young coaches at places like that because they're going to make mistakes. He was in a tough position. He started in it when, it's like everybody goes back, well, Jake Fromm took the job from Jacob Eason. No, he didn't. Jacob Eason got hit late out of bounds, turned his ankle, and Georgia started winning.
Yep.
But Jake Fromm wasn't playing great football at the time.
No, the defense was incredible. Yes. Yes.
So it keeps them in. Well, they go to the national championship game. You get this lifetime recruit, and you're having a hard time pulling the trigger because of probably just fear of what it does in the locker room. Well, I think we saw Nick Saban also struggle with that a lot in his career, you know, making the change, when's the time, you know, how's it going. But I think that the one thing, if you're a Georgia fan, that's promising through some of these bad mistakes that he's made early on is that the offensive coordinator position this year, he fired the guy. Well, he demoted the guy after 1 year. He said, this isn't working, and we're going to make a change, and we're going to make a vow change. So he brings in, you know, the offensive coordinator from the Cleveland Browns, but a guy that had a lot of success at Oklahoma State prior to that. He brings in another offensive coordinator, gets him the analyst position. He loses Sam Pittman, who was, in my opinion, the best offensive line coach in the country.
Yes.
But brings in Matt Luke, which was a great addition as you get. But he went and got all these offensive minds, and I think he realized, okay, I've got to change it up. So I think if you're a Georgia fan, be nervous, because more importantly, I couldn't understand how you missed that, because I was one of those guys on Twitter that was just banging the drum. If you got to put Justin Fields in, like it doesn't, you got a chance to win with Justin Fields, especially this year. Now, what did it get you? You went with Fromm, and it got you 1 year of him being horrific this year.
Right.
He's gone, and now you're relied on a transfer. I mean, it was a terrible decision. But if Kirby Smart has showed anything, that he makes mistakes, but he seems to be willing. That was Mark Richt's problem. Mark Richt couldn't learn from him.
No.
Right? He hired Willie Martinez, and he kept Willie Martinez around forever.
Yep.
And Willie Martinez was terrible, and he probably missed a good opening gate that he had there with guys like Stafford and Marino and all those guys. So he seems to, unlike Rick, he seems to learn from his mistakes. But, boy, it's hard to understand how a Division I head coach at an SEC program could miss that, because Fromm has been, if you ask me, one player that's been really, really overrated the last 3 years, it's been Fromm. And so maybe he's learned. I don't know. We'll see.
Man, to take it to a guy you just talked about, a little bit interested to see what you think about Arkansas with Sam Pittman, what he's going to do. What can they do to turn it around? Because Chad Morris was a catastrophe.
Is he going to be better than Brad Bielema and the stripper? That's what we're wondering.
I really hope so, because I think that Sam Pittman has something, a few things really going for him. A, he's a great recruiter, right? B, he develops great offensive lines. And, you know, C, he loves being at Arkansas. Like, he loves.
Yeah, you can tell.
Right. And there's a difference in a guy that comes in and he's looking for a stepping stone, and a guy that comes in and is looking to really turn around a program and he wants to be there for the rest of his career. So I really like that about Pittman. But going from an offensive line coach to a head coach?
Very odd.
That is a jump.
And he's moved around a lot. He was at Tennessee in, what, 2012? And then he, you know, skipped around a little bit, and he was at Georgia for, what, 4 years?
Yeah, really. He wanted, you know, he really liked Jim Chaney, and he went there. And again, I mean, the players, he's a guy, the players, he kind of reminds me, though, and I'm not saying he's going to have this type of success, although we'll see how deep that success is now that Burroughs is gone. But it kind of reminds you of Orgeron a little bit, like, when they hired Orgeron, you're like, what are you doing? Like, LSU. Why are you hiring a defensive line coach that bombed out?
Let's go.
Right. And
another ex-Tennessee guy and Ole Miss.
Yeah, and I thought it was a terrible hire. I mean, I thought hiring Orgeron was a terrible hire.
Everybody did, and joke's on us.
But, I mean, and we're going to see how, you know, no matter what, it's turned out to be good because they got a national championship. We're going to see if he's able to continue that, but it seems like whether people argue about who's pulling the strings there to make these decisions, but it seems like he's a guy that realizes I'm going to put great people around me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put great, you know, obviously he's in a lot easier situation at LSU. I mean, you and I could go there and we could win 8 games, no problem. Without any experience because it's LSU. So I'm hopeful for Sam Pittman, but it's one of those head scratchers. It's like, man, when you look at the hires and you look at a guy like Leach going to Mississippi State and a guy like Kiffin going to Ole Miss, no offense to you Tennessee guys.
hey, none taken.
It's like a friend that's dating one of your old hot exes or something.
Right, and you know what? You're cool with it because like you respect them both, but at the same time, you're like, eh, they're great for each other.
And you were with her when she was fun and dumb.
Right, and now she's like all serious and just not, you know, just
wanting
unbearable.
To get married and beat her ex-husband, which is Saban.
Right.
I think the thing that scares me the most about Kiffin, though, if we just want to be completely transparent here, is he doesn't have that unbelievably hot, beautiful wife no more, right? Like
Layla left him.
Right. Yeah. The training, the leash is off.
But I'm gonna tell you, and I've been to every SEC stadium, obviously, but I've been to most stadiums in the country.
Vaught Hemingway, baby.
And I'm gonna tell you, they don't get much prettier than they do at Ole Miss. I mean, it is like an unbelievable festival of beautiful women down there.
Just
right?
Tan and blonde. Yeah, my mom, she's a big Ole Miss fan, so I grew up going to the Grove, so I can say that. But yes.
Hottie toddy.
Yeah.
So without a doubt, I'm fearful that I don't know how long he's going to last while the temptations he has.
Hey, we've all heard about the Knoxville stories.
Right. That's my point. And Ole Miss, like I said, that, you know, we'll see how it turns out for him, but there's some distractions there. But
Boca Raton, there's no way there wasn't distractions in Boca Raton.
Oh, I know. No, you're right.
Is there a theme there? Does he just go where the, you know, where the stock is hot? I mean, I don't know. Like, are we on to something here, or is this just a coincidence?
Knoxville,
Alabama,
Southern Cal, Florida. I mean,
these aren't just
these
random.
These are your top-notch campuses,
about.
You know, right. For talent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's not hanging around Vanderbilt or
No. He's not going to Iowa.
He's not at East Tennessee State or nothing like that. Right?
No, sir.
He's in good. He's a good coach. But my point is, if Mississippi State can pull Mike Leach, I got to believe Arkansas could have pulled Mike Leach because that's a job that historically has a lot more appeal to it than Mississippi State, although a lot of credit to them. They've done some really good things there. Especially their facilities and new things they built there, but we'll see. It's a gamble, and they better hope it pays off. But man, it almost feels like they've been going to all these homegrown hires in Arkansas for so long. Right, that Chad Morris was a sexy hire.
Right.
Basketball has had, you know, all these sexy hires, and it's kind of
Jerry
like
Stackhouse.
They've been disasters. Most of their hires at Arkansas have been disasters. So it's kind of like, okay, the hot flashy hire is not working. Let's try it this way. And I hope it works for Sam Pittman because he's a heck of a man. And I know that they will not find a guy in the world that's more dedicated to that program than he'll be.
And, man, you know, we could talk to you all day, but we got one more question for you.
And, man, really, this is kind of a selfish question. You know, we really look up to what you do, and obviously we're trying to emulate that. I was just really interested to see what your best experiences of, you know, being a sport reporter was, whether it's a game or getting to interview somebody, you know, just wanted to see.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, to be honest with you, it's going to surprise you because I've been at a lot of big games and I've been in a lot of big locker rooms. But I'll tell you the most memorable moment that I've had in my sports career, and I'll never forget it as long as I live, it'll supersede everything else that I've seen, no matter how many championships I've seen, great games. The number one moment for me was, believe it or not, the Music City Bowl when Vanderbilt played Wake Forest.
Really?
And I'm going to tell you why it was such a big moment for me, and I hope it kind of shines a light. So I had been somewhat, at the time, blackballed by the Vanderbilt staff. Ooh. And the reason I had been blackballed is because, I don't know if you remember, but that year, I believe it was his second year there, maybe his first year, James Franklin almost gets in a fist fight with Todd Grantham at the Georgia Vanderbilt game.
Yes.
After the game. And I wrote an article about it, and it went almost viral, saying that basically James Franklin started it, but Todd Grantham finished it. And if the idea was that James Franklin was jawing to a player, and that's what kind of set all that off.
Yes.
And so...
Which he does. He jaws, and he puts on for the cameras. And that's, right. You know, and that's kind of a thing that he's got a reputation for. But keep going, sorry.
He does, and so he kind of blackballed me, and it was kind of crazy, like, free roam at Alabama and Georgia, but Vanderbilt's handcuffed me, right? Kind of
the doctors of the SEC cutting out Dr. SEC.
It's really, that's irony at its finest.
So I didn't cover them that whole year, and I go to the Music City Bowl to cover them, and I take the kid with me, a young man. He was probably 11 or 12 at the time. He had cerebral palsy, and huge Vanderbilt fan, though. And so we have him in the press box, and he is absolutely, I mean, they'll call off names in that press box, but he could call them off before anybody else could call them off. Like, he knew everything there was to know about Vanderbilt.
Oh, yeah.
Loved Vanderbilt. His physical therapy director had a son that played there, and that's kind of where the strong tie began.
Right.
So, I really, you know, Music City Bowl gave me a little liberty to take him, and instead of bringing just regular press friends and a thing, I brought him with me, and we go down on the field right before the end of the game. The game ends, and Vanderbilt wins, and I'm walking over, and James Franklin sees us. Now, mind you that at the time, he didn't really know what I looked like because I had wrote the article post-experience, and I was fresh starting out. I mean, that was, you know, probably 7, 8, 9 years ago. So he doesn't know who I am. He comes up to me, and he wraps his arms around and just hugs this little kid. And I thought it was really cool because of all the things that he does for publicity and all the things. Like, this was him kind of behind the moment just caring about somebody.
Right.
Which was really cool. So he then takes him into the locker room, and he takes pictures with Zach Stacy, and he takes pictures with the championship trophy. And
right.
He does all this. And I'll just never forget that moment where all of these players didn't know this guy. They just won the Music City Bowl, which doesn't sound like a lot to a Tennessee fan, but this is a team that really, that was the height of their program ever.
Right. I mean, we lost to the Music City Bowl against North Carolina, so.
But beat Nebraska. But, I mean, it's in their city.
They're winning 8 games for the first time in, you know.
It's a home game.
Back-to-back bowls and all. Right. So this is the height of that program right now. You know. And they're taking out time for this kid, and nobody knew, had any connection with him. He just said, do you mind if I take a minute? Said, yeah, go ahead. Took him in there, took pictures with him, let him hang out with all the players. He spent about an hour in the locker room with his team, everybody treating him like gold. And so I think that story for me will always surpass any of the sports because it wasn't just Franklin. It was this whole program. You know, wrapping this attention and this situation around this young man that had every reason to be negative and just, you know, could barely walk and all the things that went with that. It was really cool to see them just take this guy they didn't know and just make him family over one day. And it was really, really cool to watch. That, believe it or not, that's the experience I remember most.
I mean, you know it better than anybody. Hey, it just means more.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it, man, is because we see all these guys and we see all these players and we talk and, you know, the hard part about our job is kind of, it really sucks sometimes that you got to be critical of a young man.
Yes, it does. Right.
That part kind of sucks. Like, I hate that I have to say that Jake Fromm's overrated and that, you know.
Well, because athletically, they can do more than we ever could.
Right, right. And I mean, they're tremendously, you know, gifted athletes. And they're young men, and now I've got a daughter who plays college basketball, and so
that's awesome.
Gets me a little bit more, and so it's kind of like you hate that part of it, but you forget that the culture of that locker room sometimes, or all the negativity, there's some really positive things there. And so to me, man, it was really cool. That kid will never forget that moment. Yeah. And that moment where he was, he'll never be able to play football. He'll never, you know, he's about to point now, I can't walk anymore. Mm. But he'll never experience any of that. But for a moment, he was the star. And I thought that was really cool of them.
That is cool. That's really cool. There's no better feeling than that, man. And honestly, I mean, that's why we love sports, because it's bigger than a win or an all-star or something like that. It brings everybody together, whether it's home or away, or it's when else besides a concert or a sporting event do you get 40,000+ people together that's not a political event or something like that? It's just kind of a really cool thing. And like you said, man, people who might not get the chance to be the star,
it affords them the opportunity. I mean, like this guy, but yes, he got to live his dream. Yeah. He was a Vanderbilt Commodore for a day, got to go to the locker room.
Absolutely. And just to see him there, with guys like, Zach Stacy, and just sitting there with the, they're holding the trophy up together. And I mean, the whole ordeal, just really cool. I posted some pictures at the time.
Get goosebumps.
It makes me almost want to go back and repost them again now, 7-8 years later, because it was really a cool situation.
Man, that is incredible. Well, Doctor, man, we really appreciate you tuning in to us. Again, everybody, please check out his radio show. It is The Waiting Room with Dr. SEC. Again, 22 stations across 7 states. That's correct, right?
We're actually up to 27 now.
27? Let's go. See, only growing here. We're only growing.
I got to change my Twitter thing, but we're up to 27 now.
Perfect. Well, hey, Doctor, is there anything else you'd like to say for the people?
No, man, I just, like I said, appreciate it. I enjoyed being on your show, and I look forward to watching you guys just continue to do your thing, and I expect really, really big things. I got to hear my first episode last night, I think you got big things in your future, and looking forward to kind of seeing you guys develop.
Well, man, we want you there every step of the way, because football season's right around the corner, and if it's all right with you, we're going to need some weekly updates.
Absolutely, man, anytime.
All right, Doctor. Well, hey, we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, everybody, that was the doctor of the SEC, the all-knowing, gives you the prescriptions when you need it, cures all your illnesses, heals your fever. We do what we can to provide greatness for you. Carlisle, is there anything else you'd like to tell the people?
I was feeling sick before, but now that I went to go see the doctor, I'm starting to feel a little, my elbow doesn't ache as much.
Fine.
I feel a little better.
Oh, well, beautiful. Hey, everybody, we appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed the show. We're going to have more stuff for you soon. But, until then, we're just going to have to keep you pumping. Use your imagination. Get out there. Be creative. Make friends. Spread love. Make love.
Conquer the day.
Do whatever you got to do, because we're going to be there every step of the way. We love you. We'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to The Dome. You're